presumably. There we go. Okay. Anybody have any questions or announcements or comments before we get going? The world at large. I'm very tempted. So one of the things that seems to be coming up a lot lately, there's an election tomorrow, which of course I encourage everyone to vote. At least find out enough so that you vote for somebody who you agree with. And a lot, there's a lot of news because this is the election in our history, the history of this country, in which we're using the most computers to do tabulation of results and collection of votes. They're using voting machines in more places than ever before. And, you know, computer scientists, we like, you know, people using computers. It kind of makes us feel like we're helping. But if you talk to computer scientists about voting machines in particular, by and large, they're horrified because they're just so prone to all kinds of scary mistakes. And a lot of computer scientists have been speaking out against the use of computers for voting, at least the way that they've been deployed lately. And so I'm very interested to see if this ends up being a really big deal tomorrow or not. So anyway, that's one. Computers in the news right now. One of the ways they're in the news is computer scientists are saying, slow down. You know, we like technology, but let's not get crazy. So we'll see if it ends up being a problem or not. Okay, all right. But that's not about graph algorithms. I was reading this article to you guys last time. I think I'll just let that go. So another name for this lecture. I'm going to give three different lectures where I try to help you understand what Google does. Now, I chose Google because, first of all, it's really interesting from a computer science standpoint. And second of all, people use it. And by and large, I haven't found too many people who say, oh, Google, bleh. Mostly people say, this lets me do things that I never thought I could do before. It turns out that it's easy to find out stuff that used to be very difficult to track down before. So Google's cool. I want to tell you a bit about Google. Most of the stuff that I say is true of any search algorithm. This is not specific to Google, so I don't mean this to be a Google commercial. It's not like this is what makes Google special and the other search algorithms are stupid. This is just what I think people are more familiar with. So here's the question. I want to start off with this. How does Google find stuff? Right? You ask Google for stuff, and it seems to know an awful lot. Where does it get all that information from? And so that's, I'd like to at least pose this as a thought problem. So let me try to motivate this question a little bit more by saying a little bit about what the internet is. This is a small piece of the internet, but it's a piece of the internet that I'm familiar with. So one way to think about the internet, a useful way to think about the internet, is to think that it's a bunch of computers connected to a blue blob by gray bars. And each computer has some kind of a name. The internet knows these computers by a certain name. So there's one computer called athos.rutgers.edu. It turns out it's also known by the name www.cs.rutgers.edu. It's also known by the name www.dcis.rutgers.edu. These are different names for the same actual physical computer. Then there's another computer called porthos.rutgers.edu. These are administered by the very talented people on our staff in the computer science department. There's another computer called dir.yahoo.com, another computer patmedia.net or google.com. Turns out google.com there's a bunch of computers that go by that name, actually. But google.com is kind of the gateway into that other set of computers. And then here, paul.rutgers.edu is another computer someplace. So computers can talk to each other by their names because they can send messages into this blue blob that somehow figures out who's being talked about, as long as everybody has a name. All right, so that being said, I'm going to call these names, we'll call them names or domain names sometimes, and you know, this is a computer and this is the network. So how do we go about, how does this, this network pre-existed the web. There were lots of people using computers to talk to each other in lots of different ways, but it wasn't until a particular way of having computers communicate with each other came about that lots of people started to see the value in getting computers to talk to other computers. So let me just focus on that piece. What does it mean when we go and do web browsing? Now, presumably we're on some computer. Let's say we're on porthos.rutgers.edu. So we're sitting at that computer or we're connected to that computer in some way, and we got our web browser up and we request a page from Yahoo. Okay, what does that mean? So here's what happens. Our computer sends a message through the network to the Yahoo computer, basically of the form, hi, I'd like to introduce myself, I'm porthos.rutgers.edu. It just sends that message out. Now, the computer at Yahoo can just choose to ignore us, you know. But I hope it doesn't. And if it doesn't, it'll probably say something back like this. What gives, right? Okay, I acknowledge that you sent me a message. Now, what do you want from me? So now, Porthos can send Yahoo another message, say something like this. I'm told that you have a page called science/computer science/college/university/department/B=20. Would you mind sending me a copy? Now, Yahoo could respond saying, I have no idea what you're talking about. It could respond saying, nothing at all. It could just, you know, drop the conversation at this point. But if everything's working the way it's supposed to be working, Yahoo can say, hey, I do have a page like that. I'd be glad to send it to you. Here it is. You've got a copy. Okay? Now, what there's a program running on our computer, the web browser. The web browser takes that file that was sent across the network and then makes it all pretty and displays it for you. Okay? But really what's going on underneath the scenes, there's this conversation. These bits are being sent back and forth. And ultimately, we get the bits that we need to display whatever it is that we're trying to display. Okay? So here's in particular what we see at the end of this. If we're sitting at the computer and that conversation just happened, our web browser will now display the contents of that page. And the reason I picked this particular page is because it happens to be the page that, at some point anyway, Rutgers was listed on, our computer science department. Okay, all right, but that's basically how the web works. Almost everything is done in terms of sending these files back and forth. There's fancier stuff now where you can, the Yahoo computer that I just mentioned is sometimes called the server, web server. It's got the information, and this is sometimes called the client. It's asking for the information, and almost everything works that way. That there's a client, the client asks for something, the server gives it back. The client may ask somebody else for something else, get it back. And it just keeps going like that all the time. There's now examples where you can actually tell the web server to tell our client about something that it didn't even ask for. That gets a little hairy, and it's actually not most of what goes on in the web. Oops. All right, sorry. Any comments or questions about that? Is that stuff that was already kind of obvious to people, maybe? Whenever you browse the web, there's more than just your computer involved. And this internet, I'm on the internet. It's not, there isn't an internet. The internet is just like the highway system, if you will, or the series of tubes that actually let you get information from one computer to another computer. So really all that's happening is happening in the computers. All right, so what about web search? So if I say that all web browsing consists of requests for specific pages, what if we don't know what page we want? What if there's some information out there, we think there's information out there, but we don't know the name of the page that would have that information? So what is a search engine? A search engine is a special kind of web server that can respond to a particular request for web pages. So it's still just like a web server, just like everything else. It just gets requests and it sends information back in response to that request, which can be formatted as a web page. But what's cool about it is it knows a lot of other stuff. So here's a conversation between Athos and, say, Google.com. So we can send a message saying, hi again, I'm Porthos. And Google might say, okay, what do you want? And we might say, hey, can I have a copy of the page called search:\hll=n\q=Rutgers+computer+science\btng=google+search. Generally, people don't type this, but web servers actually make queries like this. Okay, so it can ask for that, and Google can respond saying, sure, I've got something just like that. Here's a copy of it. You can display it now. All right, so what's neat is that the page that Google is constructing this page that has the information that we asked for. What's neat is that Google has this immense database of information that it can draw on to create the page for us in response to any query that we ask. Okay. It doesn't have these pages pre-stored. It actually looks at the actual words. This is the query. Q equals is the query. Rutgers computer science is the query. This, I think, means that we want the results back in English, or we want the page to be formatted using English. And I'm not sure what button G is. But it kind of, button G. So the button that we pushed to make this query was the Google search button. Anyway, that's the information that Google needs us to tell it so that it can respond with the right page. So, okay.
guess not much more to say about that.
So one way to think about this is as an example of what's called indirection. So Porthos asked Google where could find pages about Rutgers computer science. Google responded not with a page about Rutgers computer science, but a page that includes addresses of other pages that it thinks might be relevant to this query. So now Porthos gets a list of other pages. It can now, which it displays to you, right, with links, things that you can click on. Clicking on one of those links actually creates a request that goes to some other web server that hosts the pages that you're actually interested in. So Google doesn't give you the pages. Google gives you the addresses of the pages that you can now request from the web servers. So here's the question. How does Google know? Somehow Google has to put together a web page in response to any query, which includes a list of names of pages that contain those terms. That's what Google's, by and large, that's what it's doing. It's taking the words that we type in and telling us pages that are on the web someplace that have exactly those terms in them. But how does it know which pages contain which terms? This maybe seems like a sort of obvious or easy question, but it turns out to actually be very challenging to do this. So the reason I put the 1, 2, 3 is, and I'd like to get theories from everybody about how it is that it actually accomplishes this. And some of you might already know this, but I'm not going to admit right away that you're right. So I'm going to get as many theories as we can, at least three. I need to start with the chalk game. Okay, so how does it do that? How does it know what pages exist on the web? If all that we can do on the web, well, all that I told you can do on the web is one computer can ask another computer for a page if it knows the name of that page. Somehow Google seems to know everything. How does it do that? How does it know about any pages that are out there? What do you think?
Do you use like categories, not talking about like scholarly articles, and I don't know if that's what you're talking about, but I'm just guessing.
So, all right, so we'll up with categories. Well, where do web pages come from? We have some web pages for this class. I've made some web pages, like I have a home page. Web pages are created by people that have a web server. How does Google know what web pages exist?
If you make a website, file it with Google.
Okay, good. That's a very good theory. So file with Google. So this is kind of how does the government know who's in the country? Right? They haven't implanted the chips quite yet. So what they have to do is you have to register yourself with the government. Right? If you come from some other country or something, or if you're born, you have to somehow tell the government that you exist. So one possibility is every time I make a web page, as part of making it available to the web, I have to tell Google, by the way, I put up a new web page. You should know about this because you might want to include it in your big list of all web pages. That's a perfectly reasonable structure. Now, of course, they'd be depending on me to not forget to do that. And so it's possible that they wouldn't get all the pages that they wanted if they did things that way. But that's a good theory. Any other theories like that? There's another one that's very similar. So this requires a particular action on my part. When I create a web page, I fire off a message to Google to tell them that there's a new web page out there. Given that computer scientists are very lazy, we try to let the computers do anything that we would have to do that we know about in advance. We make the computers do it. Can we think of another idea that's kind of like this? Instead of every time I create a web page, I have to tell Google, maybe we could have...
I don't want to say.
You don't want to? Well, no, say. What's the difference?
I was just going to say, the computer tells.
Have the computer tell Google. That's what I was going for. Yeah. So then maybe the internet in its magic has a thing set up so that as part of putting a web page in place, some series of events gets triggered where a message eventually makes it to Google. So, what's that?
I thought that's already how it works.
That's why I'm telling you about it. Because it's not. but it's a very natural thing to think, right? Because that's sort of, a lot of things seem to work that way, right? Somehow, like when we register our car, we tell the Department of Motor Vehicles, but somehow the cops know too. And how do they know that? Because somehow part of the registration process means that information flows to the people who have an interest in getting that information. So some kind of automatic information distribution. All right, so it turns out this is not true either. And nor is this one, nor is the explicit file with Google. Though I think you might actually be able to do that, but that's not a very common way that Google finds out about web pages. All right, so if anybody else has any theories, this is a good time to tell me. Otherwise, I'm going to show you the results of some experiments I did that might give you another idea of what's going on. Anyone want to toss out any ideas? No ideas too silly. There's this guy who stands behind you, and whenever you create a web page, he's got a little walkie-talkie. That would be too silly. Anything else? All right. So okay. So let me give you a hint by way of an experiment that I designed. So. I'm going to go to the course webpage. All right, so this is the bottom of our course webpage. In the bottom of this page, I put a couple things that are relevant. One is a link to another page that I wrote called How Does Google Find Stuff? So I created a page, and the question is, does Google know about it? And I also made up a word called Skarchel. And specifically, I made up a whole series of words, and I typed them into Google, and most of them, there was some web page somewhere in the world that had this completely made-up nonsense word on it, but not Skarchel. Skarchel is a word that Google never heard about, at least as of November 3rd, 2006. But it's on this page, though. So in some sense, you should be able to search for it. So this is now a couple days ago, right? It's just maybe Friday. So let's. I don't know what the results of this experiment are going to be, but let's go to Google and type Skarchel. Okay, Skarchel's still unknown. We're going to try this again soon and see if it changes. But at the moment, there's a word that we know is on a web page, and Google doesn't seem to know about it.
Type in French military victories.
All right, what am I being set up for? Just because you're curious or because you know what it's going to be?
That's supposedly also something that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Oh, I get it. Oh, that's funny. Okay. But we're going to get lots of pages for this. French military victories. All right, we'll start off. Now, if you may or may not know. Two things to note here. First of all, 1.2 million web pages have these three words maybe in some crazy order. So it might talk about the French, and it might talk about military, it might talk about victories. You can tell Google, no, I only mean it if we have all these words together as a phrase. And the way you do that is by putting quotes around it. So we've got 48,000 pages that actually use that phrase. Including a web page specifically called French Military Victories, possibly because it's funny.
It's supposed to show up that there's none. Everyone always says French Navy.
Oh, French Naval Victories?
I don't remember. It's something about the French losing.
We got 59 pages with French Naval Victories. We've got 894. This is the weird thing about Google, right? It's actually harder than you think to come up with a phrase that nobody knows, that it doesn't know. Skarchel. No, it's, give me, anyone want to make up a word?
Youf.
Youf? Like this? Like youf? Like the youf of today knows how to spell. Interestingly, it's not one out of one. It's one out of 10. Of about 105,000 pages that have youf on them, but Google does spelling correction, right? So it actually, you probably didn't mean youf, you probably meant your. The guy who wrote this for Google was a student of mine.
Really?
Really smart guy. He's one of these students where it's like, yeah, what am I going to teach you? I mean, he could do
it. Wait, he just came up with the idea to what did you mean, and then?
He was working at Google, he got a job at Google, and he was looking for stuff to do there, and they had spelling correction, but it was really crummy. And he said, well, I don't understand why we don't just do it this way. So he hacked it up, and it's awesome.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a super smart guy. All right, so, anyway, just the youf.
I really said noof, though.
Skarchel. What's that? Oh, you said noof?
Yeah.
You think that's going to make a difference?
Yeah.
Okay. Noof. Wow, look at that. You got Arabic. 98,000 pages, the first of which was in Arabic. Anybody can tell us what that is?
It's kind of funny how any word you put in.
Yes, I agree, except for scarchel.
Try scarchel again.
No. I can, because it's still not going to work. Trust me on this.
They should have gave me like a YouTube thing.
Right, it did not. But here's what I did. So this I did a while ago, so there's been more of an opportunity for the information to propagate. This doesn't quite fit. So this is the page that you go to off of the course homepage. It's a little too big here, sorry. Resize this.
Do it by randomly pinging IP addresses?
Let's get back to that in a second. That's a good idea. All right, so how does Google find pages? This page has, so this is a web page that I created in the spring. This page has little purpose other than to include the word Google Discovery. Okay, this is a word, sort of, that I concocted in January, and I verified that it was unknown to Google. In other words, I typed it into Google, and it came back saying, did you mean Google Space Discovery? But otherwise, it had no hits. Google Discovery glued together had no hits. This page has a direct link from the course webpage. Okay, I made up a word. It's not as good as truthiness, but it's still useful. Truthiness now, of course, is everywhere. There's a secondary page, and here's the name of that page, but I didn't set it up as a link. Okay, there's another page called Google Test 2 that does not have an explicit link from anywhere. It also has a magic term that you get, and I didn't put it on this page, but I told you how to get it. Take Google and Blackout and glue them together and get Google Blackout. And I verified that that word doesn't exist anywhere. Google didn't know that page either. And I made up a third term called Google and Abyss that I didn't put anywhere. All right, so here's what happened. In January, I saved the page. For the next 4 days, I would get zero hits. In spite of the fact that there are now two words on two pages that are out there, and it was getting no hits for them. Then, 5 days later, Google Discovery, which is on this page, right here, suddenly had a hit, and in fact, it was this page. So 5 days, but eventually it found it, okay? I ended up putting that phrase on another one of my pages, and it then went away and then came back, but eventually it was pretty consistently being found by Google. And in particular, it was finding my page. All right, but notice, that this word Google Blackout, which also appeared on the web, was never ever found by Google. And so let me do two things. Let me show you that page, there's no link to this page anywhere in the world. But here's the name of that page. So I can go to it, and this is a page that has little purpose other than include the word Google Blackout. This is a word that I made up. It didn't even have a good spelling correction for it. All right, so there we go. All right, so this is a word that's on that page, and Google didn't know about it. And I don't know what would happen now, so let's just do a quick check. If we search for Google Blackout now, we actually get two hits, neither of which are on that page. This is a page that's been set up all of 2006. It's been there since January 2006, and Google doesn't know about it. Google ended up finding it in my lecture notes. So it knows the word Google Blackout, but only because it was in my lecture notes. It doesn't find that page. On the other hand, what was the other one? Google Discovery? Interestingly, between now and then, there are now 677 pages that have it on them, including a website called googlediscovery.com. This website did not exist in January, but now exists. It has nothing to do with me. In fact, it seems to be in Spanish. Anybody read that? Fabricante de Panos Quer Domino do YouTube. Something about YouTube.
Domino's on YouTube, maybe share video.
No, it has nothing to do with me. But somewhere in here is actually my page. It's there we go. Here it is. So Google finds my page using that word that I made up. But it doesn't ever find, and still to this day has not yet found Google Blackout on the other page that I created, this page here. Okay? There's your data. Give me a theory. I have one theory was random IP addresses, right? But that wouldn't explain this, because they're both hosted on the same computer. Yes?
Does the word have to come up often, like more than once?
Doesn't seem like it. Google Blackout appeared only 3 times, and it appeared on a page that it doesn't know about. Why doesn't it know about that page? Why does it know about my lecture notes, but it doesn't know about this other page that I created? They're all on the web. You can access them all through the web. Why doesn't Google know about them? What's the difference? What does it say about how Google finds stuff? One thing to note is it doesn't find things right away. So even if there is some kind of paperwork process that has to go through when a page gets created, it's not instantaneous. It seems to be a 5-day lag before that information, at least 5 days, maybe more, before it propagates to Google's computers. But that still doesn't explain why this page that's been up for almost a year, Google doesn't know about. What do you got?
Goes to the pages that it already knows, and then goes to the links that were created.
So this page doesn't get found because
you made up that link.
Nobody links to it.
Yeah.
Right? This is letters, but this is not a link. A link, you have to actually tell it explicitly, this is a link. And this is, as far as it knows, this is just a bunch of letters. It just happens to spell out a link. The only way what's your name?
John,
right. So what John is suggesting is that what Google actually does is it knows about some pages for whatever reason, and each of those pages has links to other pages. So it can follow those links, it discovers new pages that have links to other pages. Well, it turns out that my course page is linked from my home page, and my home page is linked from the Rutgers Computer Science home page, and the Rutgers Computer Science home page is known to Yahoo, and presumably Google knows about Yahoo. So if it just followed the sequence of jumps of links, it would find that page, but it would never, ever, ever find this page because nobody's pointing to it. That's actually how it works. That act of actually going around the web, scouring for pages and following links, they call it spidering, because you're walking around on the web. It's not just me who makes up puns. So any questions about that? So that's what I want to talk about today, and John is going to help me at the end, is to talk about how when you've got a structure like this with links, with pointers, that you can go and visit things that are in that structure. Okay? So maybe you didn't know this, but this is how Google works. I think that's kind of useful information to know. Maybe not useful, but it's kind of cool. So that's how Google knows stuff. Google knows stuff because it has a list of some pages that it knows about, and then it follows the links on those pages wherever they may lead. Each page that it finds out about, it creates a database that says, here's a page, and it looks on that page to see all the words that are on that page, and it just remembers, these are all the words that are on this page. If anybody asks for any of these words, I should tell them about that page. Now, how it does that quickly is the content of another lecture, Wednesday, if we get to it. All right, so that was the experiment. So what do we think now? Google knew the word Google Discovery 5 days after I put the page. It still doesn't know about the word Google Blackout. We need to understand how pages know about each other. So let me give you, the web has a lot of pages on it, and a lot of them are actually dynamically generated, so in substance it has an infinite number of pages on it. So I don't want to show you that on a slide, but let me just show you a piece. So here's a list of web pages. This is the course web page from last semester. This is my home page. This is Monica's home page. This is the Python page off of my course page. This is the Google Test 1 page that I just showed you. This is my lab's home page. This is another web page that I created called Google WAC. A Google WAC is a word or phrase that gets exactly one hit in Google, not zero and not a zillion, exactly one. I have a people page for my lab. I have a Google Test 2, another page I showed you, and what is that? My publications page. Alright. So each of these has links on it. So this is what I'm showing you here. The course web page has a link on it to my home page, number 2. It has a link on it to Monica's home page, number 3. It has a link on it to itself, it turns out. It has another link to 2. It has a link to 4, which is the Python page. It has a link to 5, which is this Google Test 1 page. Okay? So for each of these pages here, I made a list of all the other pages that you can get to through a link on that page. So here's one way of kind of drawing this that I find useful. This is, the computer scientists call these graphs. Probably mathematicians call them graphs too. Here's the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 pages that I just described. And they all kind of live out there as pages, but they also have links on them. And I'm going to draw the links as arrows. So my home page If you look at my homepage, it's got, there's a place on my homepage where you can click to go to my lab homepage. There's a place on my homepage you can click to get to the course webpage from last semester. There's a, my lab has a people page that lists all the people that are affiliated with the lab. That has a link to my homepage, but my homepage doesn't have a link to it. So notice that these things don't have to be symmetric. I was gonna say it's kind of different than like friendship, but I guess friendship doesn't have to be symmetric either, right? I have a friend, but that friend is not, doesn't think of me as a friend. Anyway, so that's what these links are indicating. The arrow is saying there's the base of the arrow is on a web page. The pointy part of the arrow is going to the page that it has a link to. Cool with that? This is a, I think of this as a very natural way of displaying this information, but maybe this is new to you. So if you have a question, this would be a good time to ask.
What's the one that goes around itself?
Right. So it turns out that on the course web page, I wrote this so that you could, so I could print it out, and so it actually has a link to the course homepage on it. And so I just drew this as a self link. You click on that and you get the same page again, which, by the way, has a link back to it. Anyway, you can waste an hour, really, just going around that same link over and over again. Smart people don't do that. Okay? This is the page that has Google Blackout on it. It has a link back to the course homepage, but there's nothing linking to it. There's nothing that points to it, right? So it's got an outgoing arrow, but it has no incoming arrows. Everything else has at least some kind of incoming arrow, I think. Yeah. All right? Clear enough? So we call these things graphs. We call the web pages, those rectangles, we call them nodes, and we call the links, links. Sometimes edges if we're being pedantic, I think. All right, so here's some terms that we use when we talk about graphs. A source is a node that has no incoming links. Okay, so you can get out of it, but you can't get into it. So kind of a source of arrowness. A sink is a node with no outgoing links. So you can get there, but you can't ever leave, at least not by following links. A path is a list of nodes such that each adjacent pair of nodes has a link from the first to the second. So it's a sequence of nodes such that there's a link from the first one to the second one, the second one to the third one, the third one to the fourth one, and so forth. That's a path. You can travel along it. A cycle is a path in which the first and the last nodes are the same. So you start off on some place, you follow a link, you follow a link, you follow a link, and then you're back where you started. That's called a cycle. Like the Krebs cycle or the water evaporation cycle. It's that kind of cycle. Not like a bicycle. That would be different. A connected component, we say, is a set of nodes such that there's a path from any node to any other node in the set. So there used to be a commercial, which probably you're all too young to know about, but it was a guy pretending to be from Maine, or maybe he really was from Maine. And somebody was asking directions, and the guy said, "You can't get there from here." But he said it with an actual Maine accent and not a mangled one. In a connected component, you always can get there from here. You can get to any node, you can follow a path to get to any other node there. If you can't get there, it's not part of the connected component. A tour is a cycle, right? So you're hopping along, that includes all nodes in the graph. It's kind of like a tour, right? And like we're going to go visit all the nodes in the graph, but we're going to come home at the end of it. That's called a tour. So now you know some terms. Let's apply them to that graph. Oops. I don't remember what the word is. Okay, so a source is a node that has no incoming links. Do we have any sources here? Google Blackout. Yes, this is a source. There's no way in, but you can get out. Well, it doesn't matter if you can get out. All that matters is you can't get in. What about a sink? A sink is a node that you can get to, but you can't get out of.
Wouldn't the back button get you out of it, though?
Yeah, but that's kind of by not following the graph. Yeah. If we're only following links, you can hit a dead end. So a sink is a dead end. Do we have any dead ends?
Our course page, the Python page.
The Python page. The Python page, right. We can get there from the course homepage, and once we get there, there's no outgoing links. Good. All right, what about a path? What would be an example of a path? Can you give me a path from the RL people page to the Python page? What would a path be? It's a series of nodes, and each adjacent pair in that series has to have an edge from the first to the second. Basically, how would you get there from here? How would you get to the course, the Python page?
Go from Michael's homepage.
Well, wait, we're starting here.
Yeah.
So then we're going to first go to
Michael's homepage.
Okay, good, by following this link. Good.
And then our course webpage.
We can go to the course webpage.
And then
and then we go to Python. Good, very good. All right, so that's a path. That series of nodes, boom, 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 is a path. Whereas, this, that's a sequence of nodes, but it's not a path because you can't actually follow it. What else was on the list? Cycle. Can you find me a cycle of a size 3?
Yeah.
Good. So we can go in a 3 cycle, right? We can travel through 3 nodes, and the last one is the one we started on. Good, good. A tour. Could we do a tour? Now, a tour is a cycle, which is a path, that ends up where it starts and touches every node in the graph. So why can't we have a tour? So the answer is no, there's no tour here. But how do we know that? We could list all possible ways of ordering the nodes in the graph and check every single one of them, but that would be insane.
No, you can do it.
You could do it, but it would be insane. Oh, you can make a tour, you're saying?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
No, because like if you go start at the very bottom one.
Okay, this one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Way up.
Good.
And then to the right.
Good.
Oh, shoot. No,
there we go. All right. You keep thinking again. Go ahead. You have an explanation, though. Yes? How did you convince yourself that there's no tour? We have a sink. Now, what has to be true in a tour? In a tour, we have to be able to walk from node to node to node and eventually get back out. So every node in the graph has to have something going in and something going out. Right? Otherwise, we'll be stuck there. And in fact, we have sources and sinks. If we have a source, you can't have a tour. And if you have a sink, you can't have a tour. All right? So this was just for practice. Yeah?
Wouldn't you want to avoid sinks, though, like if you were designing a web page? I know it's probably off subject, but...
So graphs come from many different places. And I'm going to give a list of different places. If, particularly, the graph that you get from creating a chunk of the web, you're saying you don't want to have, what, a source or a sink?
You wouldn't want to have sinks because it seems like...
You wouldn't want to have a sink like...
Your website to be a tour?
A connected component.
Connected.
You want it to be a connected component. You want to be able to get from any page to any other page by following links. I think that is considered good web design.
Okay.
Sorry. In particular, what do people usually do? Usually, on any web page, there's a way to get home. There's usually a home button, right? And the home button... From the home button, you can get anywhere, and from anywhere, you can get to the home button. Therefore, that whole piece of the web is a? Not a tour. Doesn't have to be a tour, actually. It has to be a connected component, though, right? There has to be a way of getting, there's going to be a way. You can always get from home to anywhere and from anywhere to home. Therefore, give me any two nodes, I can get from one to the other by first going home and then going from home to the one where I want to go. As a proof, sort of. All right, so we gave these terms. The thing about graphs is, if they were just describing web pages, then they wouldn't be all that useful. But it turns out they describe tons and tons of things. But let me give you, before I talk more about it, let me give you two more definitions. One, a graph is undirected if each connected pair of nodes is connected in both directions. If you can get from X to Y, you can get from Y to X. Some graphs have that property, some don't. The web doesn't, but other graphs do. An undirected graph is a tree if it has no cycles. So you think it would actually have cycles. A directed graph is a tree if it has no cycles. Not quite true either. If it has no cycles, never mind. You know what a tree is, and I'll show you examples if you don't. In each example, we're going to ask, is it directed or undirected? Is it a tree or is it not? All right, so here's an example. So this is a structure that you can use to display a tournament. There's tournaments going on all the time. This particular tournament seems to be a bunch of battles between cartoon characters, or whatever, comic book characters, superheroes, like Jean Grey. I now know who that is. I didn't know who this is when I created this slide. So anyway, they pair up Thor and Bucky, and they say who won, and then they more pyro, and eventually there's a champion, Darkness. All right, anyway, the point is that this is a graph structure. Each person in each match is a node, and two nodes are connected if it's basically the result of a tournament. So if you think about the nodes as being all the players initially, and then we have another node for whoever won each match, we have a structure. In this case, it's a tree, because this is the root of the tree, and everything kind of goes down into leaves, and there's no way of jumping between one node and another node except by going up to the root. Okay, so what is this called? Do you know what this is called? Get the name of this. It's a tournament, but there's lots of different kinds of tournaments. This is a kind of tournament where once you lose, you're out.
Elimination, single elimination.
Yes, that's right, that's what it is. Single elimination tournament. So single elimination tournament is a kind of a tree structure, it's kind of a graph. And if you write computer programs that manipulate these kinds of structures, for example, if you want to, predict winners of matches or something like that, you need to have some way of representing this kind of structure in the computer. All right, a rail map. This is New Jersey Transit, I think. This is the T system in Boston. If you think of each station as being a node, and there's a link between two nodes, if there's train tracks that go between them, so you can go directly from one to the other, you end up with a graph. In this graph in particular, let me ask you some questions. Is it directed or undirected? If you were designing a subway system, would you make it directed or undirected? What does that mean? Directed would mean that I can go from station A to station B, but I can't necessarily come back. Directed. Yeah, that wouldn't be a good way to design a subway system, because really hard, even if it were connected, it would be very hard to navigate. Undirected subway systems are much better. Or whatever, commuter rail line. So it's undirected. Is it a tree? A tree would mean that there's no way of making a cycle other than by going out and coming back along the same sequence of nodes. There's no loops that you can make. There's pieces of it that are very tree-ish, right? Look at this is called the green line. I used to live out here someplace. The green line is a tree, right? There's a series of nodes that branches off, but once you split on a branch, it never reconnects for farther down. So that's a tree. But is the whole map a tree? Is there any way to make a cycle in here apart from going out and coming back the same way? I guess you have to look at it a little bit. Or if you've been in Boston, you might know. But at the very least, there's a little four-cycle right here in the middle of everything, where you can go red line, yellow line, blue line, green line, and then back where you start. So there's cycles in here. So the whole structure is not a tree. There are other places where I think these are also shared nodes. You can go green line, yellow line, the same station. All right, what about, is it completely connected? Is it a connected component? Can you get from every point to every other point? No, eventually, through a path. Yeah. So what are you thinking? Yeah, because otherwise people would be gathered up at some point in the graph that they can't leave, right? There'd just be a huge pile of human beings, and Boston would be devoid of humanity at that point. Just be, I ended up at that subway station that you can't leave. So you don't do that. Sometimes when I'm driving in unfamiliar places, that's my fear. I have this fear that, like, just over that road, the road's going to end, and there's just going to be a big pile of cars on the other side. And I thought, probably not. I'll just keep driving. Okay, all right. Anything else to ask about this? Anyway, so it turns out to be very useful to do this. And also, why would you want a computer to know this graph? Well, let's say that you're at Riverside, and you want to know how to get to Harvard. You need some way of actually finding a path, right? Finding a sequence of stop stations that you go through that would get you to Harvard. That kind of algorithm is really useful, and there's websites that actually do this. You can say, I'm at this intersection in Boston, tell me how I get to this other intersection in Boston. Oh, there's something else that probably everyone has used that actually has that kind of feel to it.
MapQuest,
right? Direction finding. It's the way that those direction finding programs work is they've got a big graph on the inside. Now, these graphs are enormous. They have a node for every intersection between roads. But that's all they are. A circuit diagram can be represented as a graph, and so can mazes. And is that where we turn over to you? No, let me just go on a little bit more. So John's going to give you some examples where you think of a maze as a graph. Each intersection point in the maze is a node, and each corridor that you can pass down is an edge or a link. And you can talk about whether you can get from one place in the maze to another. Find me a path that goes from the start to the end. It's just graph search. I like this example. You can also represent sexual contact as being a graph. It's kind of cool. Unless you've actually been involved in this, in which case you probably don't think it's very cool at all. Why do people make these graphs? Go ahead. to track the spread of sexually transmitted diseases, right? So you want to know, how did this person get sick? Well, who did that person, you know, share sickness with? Anyway, you can trace it out, but this is a graph. Is it a tree? Not necessarily, right? There could be, you could imagine that it's not a tree, right? There's a person who was with a person who's with a person, and then came back. Anyway, I find this example sort of funny, but actually maybe not right now. The structure of molecules you can represent as graphs, where the nodes are the atoms and the edges are bonds between the atoms. And there's all the examples. You can think of lots of others just like this. All right, so I'm inside the 20 minutes now. That's bad. All right, so we've got 13 minutes. Okay. Is that going to be enough?
Well,
should we start with you next time?
Yep, do that.
You want to start on? All right, so here's what I'm going to do now. I've got 13 minutes. John has wrote a really cool maze display program that actually demonstrates different kinds of graph search algorithms. Before we jump into that, what I'm going to do is finish off by telling you about what these algorithms tend to look like in code. And then you might not quite get it yet, but then when you see John's programs, you won't be able to not get it. It's just too cool. All right. So here's what I'm going to do. Let me tell you how we represent a graph to the computer program. There's lots of ways to do this, but here's one. So I'm going to represent a graph as a list, and what that list is going to be is a list of lists. Each element in each list is a list of the nodes that node connects to. So let me step through this a little bit more slowly. So this list has a zeroth element, a first element, a second element, a third element, fourth, this is an empty list, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth. Okay? So the zeroth element in the list, which is the list containing six, that means that node zero in the graph has a link to node six. Node 1 in the graph has links to 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Node 2 in the graph has links to 0, 1, 6, and 7. Node 3 in the graph has link to node 1. What am I up to? 0, 1, 2, 3. Node 4 in the graph has no links. What does that mean? We had a name for this.
I hear what you said.
Oh, so. This is the list of nodes that node zero is connected to, node one, node two, node three. Node four has an empty list. There's nothing that's connected to. Therefore, it's a sink, right? This is what a sink looks like if you're writing it this way. The next node is connected to 1 and 7. The node after that is connected to 0 and 8. The node after that, another sink. Then one that's just connected to 2 and one that's just connected to 1. Okay? So that actually gives us complete information. And we can now draw the graph from that data. Okay, so what can we do with this? Here's one thing we could do. Let's say we want to know what are all the things that node I links to. So here's what we're going to do. We'll take the graph as a global. That just means that we can talk about the graph in the subroutine. We're going to print the node number, and then we'll say links to, and then we're going to have a loop that goes through everybody in that list and prints the number. So in particular, if we have this as the graph, and we say links 5. What does 5 link to? It comes back and says 5 links to 1 and 7. Does that make sense? Let's see. This is 0, this is 1, that's 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, 5. 5 links to 1 and 7. Okay? So we can list out all the things that the node is connected to. Alright? That's not the most interesting thing we can do, but I wanted to at least start with that because we're going to build on it. Alright, so here's the next thing we're going to do. Here's a subroutine that takes a list of nodes in an input and then checks to see if that actually is a path. Now, it's only a path if you can get from the first one to the second one to the third one to the fourth one with single hops. So let's try. So we're going to do this in two phases. We're going to start off with a subroutine that just does check link. So check link just says, can I get directly from I to J? Is there a direct link from node I to node J? So here's how that works. It takes the graph, it runs through all of the nodes that I is linked to, just goes through all the ones in its list, and if any of them are J, it says, yes, I can get to J. And if it goes all the way through this for loop, and it never encounters node J, then I is not connected to J, so it returns false. Okay, does everybody get that? So this is actually kind of it's kind of an OR almost, right? It's trying to say, is I connected to... We want to know if I is connected to J. Well, I is connected to J if in I's list of who it's connected to, either the first one is J, or the second one is J, or the third one is J, or the fourth one is J. If any of them are J, then we have a direct link. Otherwise, not. Okay? Does that make some sense? All right. So now what we want to do, if we're going to check a whole path, which is a series of nodes, so let's say, check link 1, 2 returns true because there's a link between them. Check link 1, 6 returns false because of all the things that 1 is connected to, 6 isn't one of them. Then we can check, is there a path from 1 to 6? No. No, sorry, is 1, 6 a path? Is 1, 2, 7 a path? It says true. So how does it do that? So we give it a path, L, and it's going to run through all the elements in this list, L, one at a time. And for each one, it's going to say, is there a link from that one to the next one in the list? If that's false, then we don't have a path, so we return false. If that ends up being true all the way through here until we run out of nodes in the list, then we say, I guess there is a path. We made it from the first one, the second one, the third one, the fourth one, to the last one. There must be a path. Okay, all right, so that's a little more complicated. We're not quite all the way there yet. Here's the next thing we want to figure out. We want to know whether something where one node is reachable from another. Can you get there from here? Now, really what we'd like to know is, how do I get here? How do I get there from here? But let's just first answer the question yes, no. Is there a way? Is node J reachable from a node I? And the answer is yes if there's a path that begins at I and ends at J. So let's list all the nodes reachable from I. Any node that is reachable from a node that I is linked to is also reachable. So what does it mean to be reachable from I? It means either I is connected directly to that node, or I is connected to some other node that's directly connected to that one, is J, or if not, one of the nodes that it's connected to, you get this kind of, like the sexual contact graph, right? It's like, has this person interacted directly with this other person? So reachable just means, is there a path that takes you from one to the other? So here's a broken algorithm for doing this. We say, we start off at some node I, and we say, well, certainly that node is reachable. And then we run through everybody that I is connected to, and we say, anybody that they're reachable from is also reachable from I. So we start off and we say, all right, who's reachable from 4? 4 is reachable. And then it stops. Why? Because 4 is, in this graph, same example from before. It's what?
It
has no outgoing links. Is that what you mean? Yeah, so it's a sink. So it says 4 is reachable, but then there's nothing that it's connected to, so it just stops. All right. On the other hand, and this is where things get broken, we say, okay, who's reachable from 6? Well, 6 is reachable from 6, and 6 has a link to 0. So it says, okay, well, 0 is reachable from 6. What's reachable from 0? Well, we can get back to 6. 6 is reachable. Okay, well, can you reach from 6? Well, 0 is reachable. Anyway, this doesn't end. This just keeps going forever. This is an infinite loop. This is a problem. So it does list things that are reachable from 6, but it doesn't list everything exactly once. And that would be a useful thing to do. How can we make it so that it only listed everything once? We can say, once you visited a node and said that we're connected to that node, we should never go back there. If we end up back there, we should just not print anything. So this is an algorithm that does that. Maze, so John is going to handle that. John's going to handle depth first search and breadth first search. Oh, if not, then let me do depth first search.
Yeah, I could put in that.
Let's say yes.
Okay.
All right, so John's going to tell you how this works in a maze, but let's just link this back to Google one more time. So how does Google do what it does? It has three main phases. The first one is the web crawl, also known as spidering. This is when it goes out. There are computers at Google that do nothing but this all day long. They just browse the web. They just browse the web. They go to a web page, they're like, oh, web page, put it in the database. Okay, who does that link to? Lists all the ones that it linked to. It visits each one of them. Hey, another web page. Hey, another web page. All day long, that's all it does. It's huge fiber optic cable that just, it's just sucking web pages from other people's sites all day long. So that's what we're talking about today. Later, we're gonna talk about the next phase. Now it's got this huge pile of web pages that it picked up on the street. What does it do with them? It builds a giant index, basically like an index, like in the back of a book. What does that do? The book has each page, whatever words are on that page. We want to go the other way. We want to know, for a word, what pages is it on? So we had to kind of flip things around, which turns out to be equivalent to making a giant sorted list of all the words that anyone has ever used on any web page. So how do you actually do that? How do you actually sort a big list? And then finally, now that it's got this big index that knows for every word what pages it appears on, how does it respond to everybody's queries so bloody fast? And the way that it does that is it has tons of computers, lots and lots and lots of computers, that just do lookups all day long. And when you ask for something, if any of those computers are not busy helping someone else, you're assigned to that computer, it does your search, it does your index lookup for you, sends you back the results, and then waits for the next customer. It's like a huge bank or a supermarket or something where there's just aisles everywhere. Check out people everywhere. All right, so I'm going to talk about 2 and 3 in other lectures. But we're going to start off next time with John's demo of breast research, neck research, so we can get a sense of how that works. Thank you. Yes? Yes. Okay, good. At least I got through my part. So.
I thought about talking about my look.